Okay, welcome back. You're on WATD 95.9. I'm excited to introduce our next guest, ambitious, challenge-driven, and service-focused professional offering a strong enthusiasm for public service combined with a natural ability to inspire individuals and build consensus among divergent groups toward working for a common goal. We are speaking tonight with Senator Patrick O'Connor. Also, we are speaking with Executive Director of the American Telemedicine Association to help us explain ATA's position on ensuring that everyone has access to safe, affordable, and appropriate care when and where they need it, enabling the system to do more good for more people. Hello, Senator O'Connor. Thank you for joining the show.
Yeah, great to be here. Good to see everybody. Good to see Joe, Michelle, Kyle. Great to be with everybody.
Thank you both for being here.
Yeah, we're very excited to have you both with us. There's a lot going on with you using telehealth to fight COVID in this pandemic across the country. And I was hoping for both of you to shed some light on the tremendous success for telehealth in 2021 and any recent updates related to telehealth and what to expect in 2022.
Sure, I can jump in first. From the state perspective, telehealth has really exploded in popularity and availability during the pandemic. And in my opinion, and many in healthcare agree, it's really revolutionized medicine. As far as COVID goes, you know, one of the biggest barriers that people would have to access to care would be geography. And one of the things that telemedicine really provides us is that regardless of where you live, we can provide you the care that you need. And on the flip side, it's also protecting our healthcare professionals from possible exposure to COVID and, in my opinion, allowing them to use their time more valuably. Back in 2017, I was actually part of a study group on healthcare cost containment. We traveled all across the United States. And one of the things that we centered our discussion and policy work around was telehealth and being able to have an affordable and modern delivery of healthcare services. And no one anticipated that COVID would be, 3 years on the horizon. And we put in place, I think, laws a lot quicker than we wanted to. But, what we were able to do was really unbelievable. And to be able to offer this up to our residents has been something that's great. There's obviously challenges still within the system as far as disparities in the usage of telehealth amongst demographics. That's something that we're going to continue to look at. But we have a great law in place that was created due to a public health emergency, but we've made it permanent. So it's been something that's been really working here in Massachusetts. And I'm glad that we were on the forefront to create such a delivery system of healthcare for our residents.
Yeah, and just building off of what Senator O'Connor said, I do think that telehealth has been a great success story across the country. Obviously, a lot of temporary flexibilities that came about because of the pandemic in 2020 have been made permanent at the state level. And actually leading the way under Senator O'Connor's leadership, under Governor Baker's leadership, was Massachusetts, which was way ahead of the curve. And at the beginning of last year, well before a host of other states, Massachusetts was able to, as Senator O'Connor said, make permanent a lot of these temporary provisions that have expanded access to care. And it's expanded access to care to really some of our most underserved communities that for a variety of purposes had not been appropriately served by the healthcare system as it existed prior to the pandemic. A lot of other states in 2021 followed Massachusetts's lead. Indeed, from the American Telemedicine Association's perspective, 28 of the 50 states, Massachusetts included, passed a positive piece of telehealth legislation into law in 2021. And we were also able to fight back against pieces of legislation in a handful of states, upwards of 8 states, that would have rolled back the clock and made telehealth access even more regressive than it had been prior to the pandemic. So we're really batting 1,000 in 2021 from our perspective, but there's more to do. We continue to fight in 2022 for state legislatures to pass modality neutral, technologically neutral, service neutral and location neutral legislation that makes sure that telehealth is just being held to the same standard as the rest of the healthcare system, not a lower standard, not a higher standard, but just the same standard. And then at the federal level, particularly for Medicare beneficiaries, we've had a number of helpful temporary policies put in place during the pandemic that we're continuing to fight for permanency in Congress. And so we're hopeful in 2022 that Congress will do the right thing and do what Massachusetts did more than a year ago and make a lot of these temporary policies that have come about during the pandemic permanent so that there's a maintenance of the status quo and there's a dependability moving forward for telehealth services.
So important. I think what you, my apologies for my voice, but Kyle, you point out exactly the importance here and for our listeners to understand the parity element, the pieces that were so important to keep permanent parity of payment for mental health services. So that includes all the substance abuse services that might be in place for the state of Massachusetts via telehealth, as well as any other behavioral health services that we might be able to receive. So from a listener perspective, we're seeing physicians be able to be paid at the same rate, whether they did that in person or whether they did that via telehealth, which is so important. I know we talked about that with Senator O'Connor the last time we spoke, that these clinicians need to be compensated in order to be able to do that work. And he was passionate about understanding that with the clinicians. So I'm glad you pointed that out. And Massachusetts has been at the forefront of that. So our listeners need to really understand it. Thank you for bringing it up.
Michelle, I hope you have some tea and soothe that
I
voice.
Do.
We miss that beautiful radio voice you always bring to the show. But thank you, Senator O'Connor and Kyle. Senator O'Connor, what were some of the telehealth successes that you can share with us? Over 1,000 state telehealth bills filed across the country. Did our providers receive the best options for using telehealth as a modality for care? And do you agree they should have the ultimate decision on how and where is the best way to treat patients?
Yeah, I mean, Massachusetts started out really in January 2021 with the Patients First Bill, which allowed for telehealth, telemedicine to be permanent, and also you know, made sure that patients from across the state could continue receiving medical care through video conferencing or through phone without the risk of being exposed to coronavirus. And, you know, this bill also requires the insurance carriers, including MassHealth, to cover all these services. So that coverage mandate, in my opinion, that we were able to put in place right at the start of 2021 provided certainty, in my opinion, to healthcare providers that they would be able to get compensated for this, and that they in turn would then continue to make the investments that are needed to expand all of the potential challenges that come with the telehealth, whether it be you know, geographical access or other things to reduce delay in care by being able to provide people, you know, direct electronic communication with their healthcare provider. So I think the Massachusetts, right from the get-go of the 1,000 state bills that were filed that you mentioned, you know, we took this very seriously. When COVID was, I'm going to use this lightly because it's never truly in our rearview mirror, but as COVID continued to look as if we were becoming to be able to be more adaptive to coronavirus, we knew that the biggest element in healthcare that we were able to do that made the most significant difference outside of the coronavirus space was telehealth, and that we needed to do something right away. And so the governor, with his leadership and background in healthcare, was able to put really the best in the business together and craft a model that I think provides a very good foundation upon which we can build, and provides insurance carriers with the certainty that they're going to get reimbursed and that they can invest in this space. And I think those investments from the private sector mixed with the encouragement of the public sector is going to really be a recipe that's going to lead this country in telehealth as we continue to address more and more barriers to healthcare and really knock them down with things such as like telehealth.
I think that you you touched on something that's really important. You put the decision-making in the provider and the patient's hands. If this was in Massachusetts, if they felt like the care needed to be done via telephone, then the provider and the patient can have a visit via telephone and they can easily have a discussion, define the care, and the patient can go on their way and the physician doesn't have a knock on there. They are actually compensated for that. Or a virtual visit where we are in the same space and time and we're doing you know, real-time video interaction, like a FaceTime kind of thing. So I think it's important for folks to understand that. And Massachusetts was on the forefront. You guys have done a great job really touching on the things that will be able to help providers and patients connect correctly. What are your thoughts on that, Kyle?
No, I certainly agree with everything that was just said. I think that the biggest advantage of Massachusetts being really ahead of the game than so many others in making a lot of these provisions permanent was the certainty that was given to providers, to patients, to hospital systems within the state. That's a certainty that was frankly lacking elsewhere at the beginning of last year. And as I mentioned earlier, still lacks at the federal level. And so one of the things that we want to make sure is that we're empowering patients to make sure that they, as you said, have access to clinically appropriate care. And we want to make sure that government, whether through law or regulations, are not second guessing the expert medical opinion of licensed medical professionals to determine how to best deliver that clinically appropriate care for their patient. Telehealth's not a cure-all, it's not a panacea, it's not going to work in every situation. But we do know that licensed medical professionals understanding and living up to the standard of care and delivering that care can make an educated decision for themselves and for their patient as to how to best fulfill their healthcare needs. And telehealth is flexible. It works in a variety of situations. It's clearly going to become a further integrated part of our healthcare system. And I think Massachusetts really understood where the future of healthcare and virtual care is going by being such leaders with the bill that was passed at the beginning of last year, which was a long time coming. There was lots of back and forth. Even though Massachusetts was ahead of the game, it took many months of hard negotiations. And indeed, as Senator O'Connor has said, a lot of time even ahead of that initial legislative draft to get all of the right ideas in place and to do the thoughtful analysis that was needed to make this all permanent. So really exciting place to be in, and really looking forward to what comes next for telehealth in Massachusetts and across the country.
Well, very good. Yeah, thank you, Kyle. And that's great. It sounds like, you know, telehealth has come a long way, and we've done a great job, and we've celebrated some success in telehealth in 2021. The removal of in-person requirement from telemental health was big. Today, I read a press release from Gina Sella, who launched ATA Action. Can you tell us what we can expect from this organization? How will you continue to be proactive? And what is ATA's top federal priorities in 2022? Where do you stand on state licensing and the breaking down of interstate barriers?
Yeah, thank you so much. Great question, Joe, and I appreciate you teeing it up. So the American Telemedicine Association is the organization that's been around since 1993 advocating for virtual care. And way back then, it was certainly advocating at the very pioneering early days of virtual care. Subsequently, we have, of course, become a real centerpiece for policymakers as they seek to understand a way forward on virtual care policy. And we became more relevant than ever during the COVID-19 pandemic, as you can imagine, as telehealth became a household term and the average American began to experience telehealth for the first time. We wanted to be more robust in our advocacy. We wanted to make sure that that as the voice of the industry, we could be in all the rooms that mattered as policymakers made those considerations. So we're launching a new entity to be really the advocacy arm of the ATA that will allow us to be more robust in our lobbying and advocacy activities as befits a maturing industry. So that's why we went through the last several months the process of launching a new associated entity, ATA Action, that will be that advocacy arm. It'll make sure that we're in the right rooms at the right time and delivering the right message to policymakers. In terms of our federal priorities, as I had briefly mentioned earlier, there have been a number of flexibilities that allowed for, in particular, Medicare Part B beneficiaries, fee-for-service beneficiaries, to have access to telehealth wherever they need it. That wasn't the case prior to the pandemic. That access is temporary, and it's contingent upon temporary executive measures through the declared public health emergency. And so we're seeking to make it a permanent part of the Medicare program moving forward so that these beneficiaries don't lose access, don't go off the telehealth cliff when the public health emergency ends. So that's a big priority for us. I would also say at the federal level, there has been flexibilities on the ability of telemedicine prescribing for certain clinically appropriate Schedule 2 through 4 substances. It's waived in-person requirements during the pandemic, And we want to make sure that there's no continuity of care interrupted for those patient populations, very vulnerable populations that are relying on this care now through telemedicine. And then finally, in terms of your question about licensure, that's of course one of state concern, and states determine who is licensed within their state borders. And a lot of people, I think the American people don't really understand how complex it is in the United States in order to deliver care across state lines. We want to break down those barriers as much as we can. And so we're doing everything we can at both the federal and state level to encourage states to enter into reciprocal agreements where physicians and doctors in good standing outside of a state's borders can deliver clinically appropriate virtual care within that state's borders to the populations that are really desperate for choice and desperate for increased access. So it's a huge priority for us and one that's going to be taking up a lot of our time in 2022.
I'm really glad to hear about ATA Action. I think it's a great initiative. They can advocate on behalf of themselves and call people like Senator O'Connor and let them know what they think about this, why it's important for them to be able to do telehealth and for them to be able to access their provider via telehealth. So I'm glad you're heading up that ATA Action group. Thank you, Kyle, for that. And Senator O'Connor, thank you for being available to your constituents for them to be able to call and ask about this. But speak a little bit about this licensure concern that Kyle brought up. This is a little bit in the weeds from a telehealth perspective, but we have medical licensure that's guided by medical boards across. And if some of your Massachusetts folks are, you know, traveling to Florida, for example, during the winter months, because they don't want to be in that horrible snow, and vice versa in the summertime, that makes it difficult for them to keep a continuity of care across their provider. So let's speak a little bit about that and what you think might be happening in the future.
Sure. I mean, licensure has been brought up in Massachusetts, and I think that there is a good consensus amongst where we should be going in that regard. And really, one of the things that I think is a general theme that we've been talking about here is that the healthcare system that we have right now in the United States is incredibly complicated. And when it comes to states having the ability to issue licensure for certain healthcare professionals and some of the federal initiatives that want to come down, and now you have this expansion with telehealth. And I think that telehealth and telemedicine really gives us a clean slate to look at how can telehealth be applied to fix some of the problems that exist in our healthcare system that you have right now, whether it be accessibility, affordability, geographical areas, quicker follow-up post-care, pre-care. So I think that this gives us an opportunity not to look at sort of how things have been in the past, but how we can move forward and use telehealth to provide solutions to problems that currently exist and the problems are going to continue to build up. One being when you talk about licensure in general, we have a major discussion going on, not just with telehealth, but in all of healthcare with licensure because of the huge demand for qualified healthcare professionals right now. And so I think this is going to be a larger discussion that goes outside of just the telehealth realm and actually looks at the entire healthcare system and what licensure is appropriate and how we can continue to attract people to these incredibly important professions that we have. And, you know, just recently, the New York Times had a video editorial that they put out, and it's about nurses and, the private healthcare system that we have and the public healthcare system that we have and how there's just a tremendous amount of flaws and a outrageous amount of money that's being kicked around in our healthcare system. So I see telemedicine, I know it's kind of went off path a little bit, but I see telemedicine as really a huge relative to the healthcare system that we have that can really take a lot of the strain that we are experiencing off. And so when it comes to licensure, we should do what we need to do in order to provide a more accessible, more affordable, more reliable, and more immediate healthcare system.
Yeah, you touched on an important point that we didn't plan on talking about, this challenge of workforce and how do we increase and train the new workforce. And I know certainly the universities and hospitals and academic centers in Massachusetts are working hard on how do we train and transition clinicians in the academic centers and prepare them for the next next generation, the next wave of healthcare, whether that be, you know, continuation of pandemic, things like that. Let's hope not, but certainly the innovations around telehealth. So it's an important point. I'm glad you brought up the workforce topic, actually. So it shows that you've got your finger on the pulse, Senator O'Connor, your people are being well served in your district.
I appreciate that. No, and I think workforce, just generally speaking, is going to be, if I was sort of looking at a crystal ball of 2022, I think that that's going to be the biggest issue that we faced nationally and locally, is that we're going to be running out of individuals that need to fill crucial roles in these ambitious goals that we have. You know, when it comes to not just telemedicine, the expansion of telemedicine, but our climate goals, our goals when it comes to labor and to building affordable housing and all these things, they're all great. And it's actually kind of a unique period of time where we do have the resources, the financial resources that we can put behind a lot of these ambitious but necessary goals that we have in place. And the biggest problem we're going to have is that we don't have the people to actually perform the functions of what we need to do in these different areas. So it's going to be fascinating to see what we can do. The governor has put in place what I believe is one of the most forward-thinking programs called the Career Technical Initiative, where it's actually taking all of our vo-technical schools in Massachusetts and offering them up after the school day ends to any child who's not currently enrolled in a vocational program. And then outside of that, opening up at nighttime for anyone who wants to get a new career or learn a new skill or learn a trade. And they're all going to be focused toward where the highest demand jobs there are in the state. And they're going to partner with both public and private partnership to bring in employers and basically say, you know, hey, right now you're working in a job, you're making $45,000, $50,000 a year. There's, a huge demand for welders. There's a huge demand for nurses right now. You could be making double what you make in a more demand, more high demand field with more job security if you go back and, you know, take an 8-month program. And so we're really trying to focus on not just the workforce piece of it by just, you know, putting money towards workforce, but actually trying to explain to people that there's a better life for them in one of these high demand fields.
That's absolutely fantastic. Thank you for sharing that information. That's great. And I think it's important for people to know, it's not just a nurse job or a physician job. There's a lot of, as you pointed out, lots of industry types, but even in healthcare, licensed social workers, licensed clinical social workers, CNAs, other medical technician jobs that are not taking necessarily 4-year degrees. If you want to take a different route, go a vocational route, then there's some programs obviously available in Massachusetts. Thanks for sharing that. Joe, I know you have a question.
Yes. No, that's a great point about the workforce. We often say telehealth saves lives, saves time, and saves money, but it also creates jobs. So that's a great point. You know, Michelle and I recently had the great opportunity to attend the ATA Edge Conference last month in December that was held in Washington, D.C., our beautiful city, and it was all lit up for Christmas, and we had a great time. And we heard from a lot of U.S. senators and congressmen and women from all over the country that Kyle brought in to speak about telehealth. And I was really impressed with and overwhelmed with the support telehealth is getting across the country. So that was a good sign to me. And I wanted to ask you, Kyle, please tell our listeners about your ATA team and where your next national ATA event will be happening.
Oh, thank you so much. We couldn't be more excited. We had, as you noted, our first in-person event for ATA since the onset of the pandemic at the end of last year in December in Washington, D.C., where we brought together more than 10 members of Congress and also state elected officials from across the country that came to speak in support of telehealth. We also had nearly 300 attendees and just fantastic lists of thought leaders that came and spoke on stage about the future of telehealth policy. But we're delighted that our annual conference, which brings together a few thousand of the biggest leaders in healthcare to include policymakers, is going to be in Boston at the Convention Center, May 1 through 3 of 2022, in just a few months. We're about 14 weeks away. And so we couldn't be delighted to go to Boston. A huge number of our ATA staff are based in Boston. including our own communications director, Gina Cella, who you know well and are friends with. We've already scouted out the location, and we know it's going to be a fantastic place to bring together all of our leaders on telehealth to hear about what's next for, again, this amazing, growing, maturing, ever more important industry.
I don't think Joe's going to be able to stand it, Kyle. Is that right in his own hometown? I think he's just going to be giving out chowda to, and it's chowda to everyone that's coming in ATA. So definitely going to be opening arms and welcoming, putting out the welcome mat for you in Boston.
God knows I've bragged enough about it. And I'm sure in other parts of the country, they were sick of hearing about it, but I can't wait to see everyone come to my home state in Boston and talk about telehealth. Who do you have lined up for speakers? I know you always have some great speakers.
We have some really exciting names, but I'm going to have to keep you in suspense there. That's something that we're on the verge of making public, but our team that's just working flat out to get that event ready. It's got some surprises in store there, but I think you'll be impressed and you definitely won't want to miss it. And I'll just keep hanging on for a little bit longer for that list of keynote speakers and leaders and policymakers that we'll be attending. Talking to Senator Connor a little bit ago, it sounds like if you were able to join, you might be able to see him in person in addition to you, Joe, and you, Michelle. So we couldn't be more excited.
Yes, definitely. No secrets revealed today on the speaker list, but
not quite yet. You'll have to have somebody from ATA back to unveil the lineup.
Right, but certainly would love to see Senator O'Connor there and be able to, thank you for all the work you've done for the people in the state of Massachusetts. Tell us a little bit about how having your mom as a nurse in your life, she's been raising you. She's a retired nurse. Tell us how that has influenced you and your career.
Yeah, no, I mean, it really gave me a firsthand perspective of what healthcare professionals go through on a day-to-day basis, which is a lot. They carry a lot with them. They are really, in my opinion, and not to diss anyone in the healthcare profession, but I just think nurses do God's work. And, you don't know what they experience on their 10 or 15 hour shift. You don't know the patients that they have, the challenges that those patients face and some of the frustrations that those patients or families put on healthcare professionals. And it really provided me with a good sense and understanding of what we need to do as a state in order to continue to provide more opportunity for our current healthcare professionals, more avenues for people to go into the profession, as well as making sure that they're treated with the utmost dignity and respect that they deserve. And that's across the board. And I think one of the things, again, a little bit outside of the telehealth realm, but when you look at PCAs and individuals who work in the healthcare space that work with individuals with disabilities or individuals who are suffering with mental illness or individuals who are suffering with substance abuse, we as a country at this point in time, in my opinion, don't treat those individuals with the dignity and respect they deserve because they're not compensated as well as they should to do a job that is paying as much as working at a local convenience store. And instead of, scanning groceries or doing something, which again is a noble profession, but instead of doing that, they're doing almost all of the daily life functions of an individual that don't have the opportunity to do that. And I think telehealth also does open opportunities there as well in that space of providing, direct life care for individuals who need it. But generally speaking, it's been a great sort of tool to have in the toolkit to have a mother who worked in nursing, especially in neonatal care and the families that, she has been able to come across and I've been able to learn from. So it's been amazing to have that. I look, and just to follow back up on the ATA conference, I really look forward to being there. And I think it's a good indicator and validator to have an organization such as the ATA come to Massachusetts and really highlight a lot of their work, but also the work that Massachusetts has been able to do on a collaborative, bipartisan, consensus-building type way to create policy that makes sense and that helps people.
Thank you, Senator. And if I could just jump in real quick and react. Thank you for those remarks. Absolutely. Massachusetts is a leader and definitely one of the reasons why it was selected to host our conference. But I I also want to just say I've got a mother still active as a nurse. She had graduated from school, nursing school in 1977, has been working in hospitals ever since. And when she was in her mid-40s, actually went back to school, became a certified registered nurse anesthetist after having worked in the cath lab for years, and has been starting that second career path as an advanced nurse practitioner for the last 20 years. And so she's still at it. I'm sure that the hospital is lesser for your mom having retired, but better for her having been there. And I think that probably has led us in some way to the career paths we've chosen. So great to hear about those great words about your mother. And definitely the nurses across the country are real heroes, and COVID-19's definitely proven that fact. So just wanted to say amen to that.
My best to your mom.
Thank you. Same to yours.
Absolutely. Thank you for mentioning all healthcare heroes. Didn't know that both Kyle and Senator O'Connor had healthcare in their family. All of our listeners probably have 6 degrees of separation for some healthcare worker. So we love our healthcare heroes. If you see a healthcare worker, or as you mentioned, Senator O'Connor, those other ancillary services that are also providing care, whether that be your local paramedic, fire department, police department, they're all first responders. So thank them along the road. And thank you both for being here. We really appreciate you being here to talk about telehealth, the advancements in Massachusetts, and we look forward to ATA.
Yeah, if you missed our show, we'll have a copy of these great interviews with Senator O'Connor and Kyle Zebley on our Blue Saris Consulting site, blue-saris.com. We want to provide the latest information in healthcare, not only locally, but on a national level. So thank you for your time tonight, Kyle and Senator O'Connor.
Thanks so much.
Thanks, Joe. Thanks, Kyle. Thanks, Michelle.
Thank you both for being here.
Thank you, Michelle. This is Blue Saris Radio on WATD 95.9, and we'll be right back.